Hello and welcome back to Have You Seen It? I'm Maggie, and in this episode, I have three shows from three different countries to tell you about. Are you ready? Let's go. Okay, so if you're new to this podcast, every 10 episodes, I do one of these three show specials. Basically, I cover three different shows from three different countries that I can't do full episodes about, either because there isn't a lot to the show or because of how it's set up. This week, I have shows from Canada, France, and Argentina, and I'm going to do them in order of my favorite to my least favorite. So the first show this week is Kim's Convenience from Canada. It first came out in 2016 on CBC Television. It is a Thunderbird Films production and was created by Inns Choi and Kevin White. There are 5 seasons with 13 episodes per season, and the episodes are all about 21 minutes long. It is a sitcom, which is why I'm not doing a full episode because I can't really talk about the plot, because while there are underlying plots that carry out throughout the seasons, every episode is focused on a different plot and I don't really want to give any of them away, but it takes place in the Moss Park neighborhood in Toronto, Canada. There are no shows that take place within 300 miles. They speak mainly English and with some Korean phrases throughout. There is no audio alternatives and subtitles are available in closed caption English, Korean, Vietnamese, simplified Chinese, and traditional Chinese. The disclaimer that Netflix has for the show is language. The links to all the websites where I got the information for the show, the fun facts, and any other information that I did not use my memory for are going to be linked in the description of this episode as well as in the caption for the post that I made for the show on Instagram. And that applies for the other two shows as well. Usually I do that first, but I forgot, and I don't feel like having to do that 2 more times, so all of the links will be in the description of the episode. When it comes to the cast of shows, I usually stick to the main core and maybe a few supporting characters, but with this show, the supporting cast is just as important and make the show just as much as the core, so I'm gonna mention them. Some don't come until later seasons, but they deserve to be mentioned, and I don't think they're spoilers, so I'm going to mention them. So first is the Kim family, Kim's Convenience, owned by the Kim family. The whole show is based around them. We have Mr. Sang-il Kim, who is played by Paul Sun-young Lee, Mrs. Young-mi Kim, who is played by Jin Yoon, Jung, who is played by Simu Leo, and Janet, who is played by Andrea Bang. The rest of the cast is Kim Chi-han, who's played by Andrew Fung, and he is Jung's best friend and co-worker. Shannon Ross, who's played by Nicole Power, she is Jung's manager. Gerald Tremblay, who's played by Ben Bouchamont, and he is Janet's friend. I said that really French, because it is a French last name, but I don't think he pronounces it as French as I just said it. I think it's just Ben Bouchamont, but I don't know. It just came out super French, so I apologize. Terrence is the next character, who's played by Michael Moosey. He is Jung's co-worker. Omar, who's played by Ziad Ek. He is also Jung's co-worker. Stacy, who's played by Akosoa Amoadem, is also, correct, Jung's co-worker. Mr. Mehta, who is played by Sujit Varghese, he is Mr. Kim's friend. Mr. Chin, who's played by John Ng, he is also Mr. Kim's friend. And we see Mr. Mehta and Mr. Chin visiting Mr. Kim in the store a lot. And lastly, Pastor Nina, who is played by Amanda Bruegel, and she is the pastor at the Kim's local church. There are a lot more people in the show, and I'm sure if you've seen it, there is probably one or two characters that I didn't mention that you feel like I should have, but I'm happy with that group. The description that Netflix has for the show is, while running a convenience store in Toronto, members of a Korean-Canadian family deal with customers, each other, and the evolving world around them. I don't know what else I could say to better describe this show, because that's exactly what the show is about. Not all descriptions are good or completely accurate for some of the shows that we've seen on Netflix, but this one is pretty much dead on. And because it's a sitcom, like I said earlier, every episode focuses on a different thing, so going over the first 15 minutes of the first episode is sort of pointless, mainly because the entire episode is like 21 minutes, so that's pretty much the whole episode. But what I will say is Mr. and Mrs. Kim run the convenience store with the help of Janet. Janet is in college and she wants to become a photographer, so that is what she's studying in college. Jung and Mr. Kim do not talk because of a falling out when Jung was 16 years old, so he very rarely goes to the convenience store. And he works at a car rental place where he works with Kimchi, his childhood friend who actually got him the job, and who he also lives with. The relationship between Jung and his mother and sister are fine, but because of Mr. Kim still being mad at Jung and not wanting him around, they have to pretend that they don't talk to him or see him, which causes some tension between Mr. Kim and his wife and daughter at times. We also see some storylines focused on or around other characters. Of course, the main four are involved with them, but they're fun, or sad, storylines that show us who the other characters are and why they turned out the way they did in life. But I don't really know what else to say other than go and watch the show. I could talk about the show for hours, but that would include a ton of spoilers because I want to talk about certain things that certain characters do or don't do. So just go watch the show. Let me know what you thought about it so that I can talk to somebody about it, because I so far haven't met anybody in my life that has watched Kim's Convenience, which is a shame. It's a damn shame, because it's an amazing show. For my likes and dislikes, first, there's nothing I didn't like about this show. I just thought it was so funny. There's a scene where Janet keeps mispronouncing her new Korean name that she's given herself, and Mr. Kim corrects her on how to, like, pronounce it, because she's not saying one of the sounds right. And, like, they just go back and forth for a little bit, where she's like, that's exactly what I said, and he's like, that's not what you said. And, like, the whole scene about, like, why she's Janet and why she doesn't have a Korean name, it was just so funny. Like, there's so many scenes like that, too, where, like, you can see it being a real conversation. You know what I mean? Like, the whole show was hilarious. I thought the secondary characters were hilarious from top to bottom. It was funny. I don't do a lot of sitcoms for this podcast, because, first of all, there aren't a lot of international sitcoms that I've been able to find, but the thing that I love the most about sitcoms is that every episode covers something new, so if there is an episode that you don't like, the next one is focusing on something completely different, and I think it helps make them easier to binge, and this show is super easy to binge. There were days where I stayed up way past when I was supposed to go to sleep because I couldn't stop watching the episodes. Again, they're 20 minutes long, so they're super easy to watch, like, a lot of them in a short period of time, but it's one of my favorite shows that I've covered for this podcast, because it was just so funny. If you guys watched the show, let me know what you liked or didn't like about it. For things that stood out, there weren't a lot of things. Most of the things that did were some Korean words that they said, which I'll go over in a minute, but there was an episode where Shannon talks about a show called Kilkenny Girls, and I would bet my life on the fact that it was a reference to Derry Girls. But other than that, like, the things that stood out, like, if there were any cultural differences, they talk about them in the show, and they, like, describe them, so I don't want to give any of that away. But the words and phrases that I picked up, I have a lot for the show, so I'm going to try to go through them as fast as I can. The first one is Appa. It means dad. I just called Mr. Kim that. They call him Appa pretty much the whole show. The next one is Onni, and it is said female to female, and it means older sister. Nuna said male to female, and also means older sister. So my brother Michael, who's younger than me, would call me Nuna. Next is Oppa, different than Appa, Oppa, and it said female to male. It means older brother. So I would call my two older brothers Oppa. And all three of those, Onni, Nuna, Oppa, can be said to close friends and cousins, but only if the person is older than you. So you wouldn't say any of those to the person that's younger than you. Next is Yadongsing. It is said female to female, and it means younger sister. So my older sister, Melanie, would say it to me. Again, it can be said to close friends and cousins, but only if the person is younger than you. Next is the word Yawo, and it is a term of endearment, and that is translated in the show as honey. So, Yawo. Ajuma means madam and is used for a married or middle-aged woman. The original expression meaning another mother was said out of affection. However, today it's used to describe a loud, rude, middle-aged woman who's usually married with kids and is taken as an insult. So I would proceed with caution. Next is Mongjong, and it means stupid. And the last word is Gwangbukjoy, and it literally means the day the light returned, but it is Liberation Day, and Liberation Day in South Korea is August 15th. The last word I have is the English word Toonie, spelled T-O-O-N-I-E, and it is used for the Canadian $2 coin. I didn't know Canada had a $2 coin, so I guess that's something that did stand out. I will post the Korean words on Instagram so you can see them written out in Korean. If you guys are able to pick up words or phrases while watching the show, let me know. So for familiar faces, I was able to recognize Dorinda's foster mom, Mrs. Bosco, from the Cheetah Girls. Kim Roberts is the name of the actress, and she is in Season 2, Episode 8. She works at a Lotto store. She was also in Degrassi, The Next Generation, as Mrs. Smith. And I was also able to recognize Mark Anthony Saria. He is in the first season, Episode 5. At first, I couldn't think of where I knew him from, just that I knew him. And it turns out that he was in Degrassi, The Next Generation, as well. And he played Oliver Dean in Season 13. If you guys are able to recognize any of the actors, let me know. I know most of you will recognize Simu Liu from Shang-Chi, The Legend of the Ten Rings. He is Shang-Chi, but I'm not counting that because I saw him in the show first. So if you liked Shang-Chi and The Legend of Ten Rings, then definitely check this show out. But that's all I have for you guys for Kim's Convenience. It has been canceled, unfortunately, but it is 100% worth the watch. I wish it wasn't canceled, but there is a spinoff called Strays that stars Nicole Power as Shannon Ross that came out at the end of last year. I haven't watched it, but Shannon was one of my favorite people in the show. She is unbelievably cringy and secondhand embarrassment through the friggin' roof, but something about her I absolutely love. So I do plan on watching that show at some point. I just haven't at this point, if I'm being honest. If you guys do give the show a chance, let me know what you think about it. Okay, so the next show, it's a little different than the other shows I've covered because it is a reality show. It is Until Dawn, or Jusqu'à l'Aube in French. It comes from France, and it came out in 2020. There is one season with 8 episodes. It takes place all over France, so I'll put a picture of the 8 different locations so you can see where they are located. And the 8 locations, they are given in French. If you've listened to me try to pronounce French in the previous episodes where I've covered French shows, you'll know I struggle with French. So I'm gonna try my best. I've practiced, but I can't promise that they're gonna be perfect. The first one is Val Monastery. That's easy. It gets a little harder from here on out until we hit Louis XIV. But this should be interesting. So second place we have is Château d'Esquelbach. Next is Chauron-Maritime Hospital, Château du Fougeray, Château du Pumenton. I have a strong feeling I said that wrong. Château du Puy-Marton. Château du Puy-Marton. So I apologize, but I tried my best on that one. Next is Louis XIV's Fort Liberia. Next is Château Léviac. The last one is actually given to us in English, Manor of the Chasenay, but I feel like I owe you guys the French pronunciation, because I did all of the other ones in French. Except for I don't know about Louis XIV, because I don't know how to say the 14th in French. And I know French numbers are really confusing, so. But Manor of the Chasenay is Manoir du Chasenay. Again, I apologize to any French speakers out there. French is really hard. I don't know why. It's the hardest language for me to pronounce, but I did my best, I promise. They speak French in the show, and the only audio option is an audio description in French. Subtitles are available in English, Spanish, simplified Chinese, traditional Chinese, and closed caption French. It is rated TVMA. The disclaimers that Netflix has for the show is language. You also see a man's butt, but other than that, that's the only disclaimer. And that's because the guy gets into a tub naked. The tub is full of blood. Okay, so the pronunciations are not about to get any easier. So for every episode, there are 3 French comedians that take part, so I'm just going to list them because there's no character descriptions. This should be pretty easy, but we all know it's not going to be. You might only hear me say these names once, but I promise you that is because I have edited out all of the fail attempts. Here we go. In the first episode, we have Ornella Flori, Albon Ivinov, Ahmed Silla. In the second episode, we have Natu, McFly, and Carlito. Those two are easy names to say. In the next episode, we have Lola Dubini, Jimmo, and Noom Diawaha. In the next episode, we have Tanya Dutel, Jason Broker, and Hakim Jamili. In the next episode, we have Béanger Criif, Monsieur Poulpe, which means Mr. Octopus. It's a little fun fact for you. And Thomas VDB. In the next episode, we have Jean Rachid, Audrey Pio, Jean-Phi Jonsea, In the next episode, we have Issa Dumbia, Fadili Kamaha, and Lori Poiré. And in the last episode, we have Elhaj Gay, Anna-Sophie Jiher, and Guillaume Batz. So those are all of the comedians that are in the show. Again, I apologize if I said any of those names wrong. The plot for the show is pretty simple. Three French comedians go and spend a night at a haunted location in France. Until dawn. And during the night, each comedian has to undergo a challenge, and the person that does the worst has to deal with a consequence. And the challenges and consequences are all different depending on the location, and they also play pranks on each other, so sometimes it's something actual spooky that like sets them off, and sometimes it's just one of their teammates being like an asshole. I wouldn't be able to do this show because I wouldn't trust anybody, because I'd be freaking out. My favorite challenge is actually in the first episode. Ahmed has to go into a dormitory room where orphan children slept in at the Val Monastery, and Ornella and Albon are back at headquarters watching him on some monitors. His challenge reads, "In the monastery's dorm, there's been a lot of laughter, but also a lot of crying. It's up to you to go meet the children that still haunt this place. Ahmed, try to comfort them. Take the teddy bears equipped with presence detectors. If they ring, it means you're not alone in the room. Take the opportunity to sing them a lullaby." After they read Ahmed's challenge, the narrator tells us about a legend that says young orphans that had been taken in by the monastery mysteriously disappeared, and even before he gets to the room, he's already on the walkie-talkie saying that he hears noises, and when he gets into the room, the walkie-talkies aren't working, so he can't hear Ornella and Albon. All he hears is static, and he is already freaking out. And while Ornella and Albon are laughing at how scared he is, Albon sees one of the closet doors move, and Ornella sends Ahmed over to check it out because eventually the walkie-talkie works. And if you watch the show and want to know who I would be in these situations, it would be Ahmed. 100%. Because Ornella is like, go over and check out that closet door, and he's like, what do you mean go over and check the closet? Like, no. He then kicks a chair and one of the beds up against the closet in case there's like someone inside. And when Albon tells him to put his hands inside them to double check, Ahmed is like, I'm not doing that. Absolutely not. There's nothing there. Don't worry about it. And like, just to clarify, this room is pitch dark. And Ahmed only has a small flashlight, so he can't see anything. And after he confirms that the closet that moved on its own is empty, he sets up the teddy bear that they give him, and Ornella tells him to turn his light off, and he's like, fuck. Oh god, like, I was nauseous watching this, just imagining being in his, like, position. And now all he can see is whatever the night vision camera is showing him, and the screen is tiny, so it's not a lot. But Ornella tells him that now he needs to talk to the children, and she says their names, Jean, Pierre, Hugues, and Martin, and Ahmed starts talking to them, and at first there isn't anything, like there's no sounds, there's no movement, nothing. Until he asks them if they want him to sing them a song, and as soon as he says that, the teddy bear, which remember is supposed to be able to detect if a presence is nearby, starts making noises. And all three are taken aback by that, because they're like, what the fuck? And Ahmed starts to freak out a little bit. Ornella is shocked as well, but Ahmed is like, yo, wait, no, what the fuck is happening? And then he calls them motherfuckers, the children, and then he goes, oh fuck, mummy, and he really starts to lose it. It sounds like he's about to cry. Again, I don't blame him. He says he wants to stop. I don't blame him. And then he starts rocking back and forth a little bit. And then we see our first prank. So Albon goes and finds the valves for the sinks that are in the room with Ahmed, and he turns them on. And Ahmed, who has no idea that Albon just turned those on, is singing Jingle Bells to the ghost children. Of all the lullabies to pick, he picks Jingle Bells, but okay. But the moment the water turns on, he screams and is out of that room. He runs over two of the beds and is gone. And that would be me. I would have floated out of that fucking room. Ahmed runs all the way back to headquarters and had the two others feel his heart beating out of his chest. The first time I watched this, I was dying. It couldn't have been a better first challenge because it gave everything the show is. It draws you in, it makes you laugh, it might even make you jump a little, but if you don't like ghost hunting shows because they're scary or you think they're stupid because they're obviously fake, this show is still worth watching because the people break whatever tension you have by their reactions to something happening or by their reactions to how someone else is reacting to something happening. Usually ghost shows, I watch ghost shows, I'll be honest, usually they react in such like a cool, calm, collected way. These people in this show react how everybody else would react in like an abandoned castle with all of the lights off and you just were told this super scary story. Like, their reactions are what make this show. There were two challenges that I hated, but that's because they had to deal with cockroaches and rats. They do a seance type thing in one episode and it gets pretty emotional for all three members. Someone gets in a bath full of blood up to his ears where he hears noises, and the noises aren't part of a prank because both of the other people were at headquarters when it happened, but he swears he heard noises while in that tub. Someone else goes into a coffin in the middle of the woods that is in a hole in the ground and is left alone. No thanks. He isn't buried alive because I'm pretty sure that there are like rules and regulations against that, but it still had my anxiety through the roof. Because absolutely fucking not. They also fuck with a Ouija board. Like, they do a lot of different things. I'm pretty sure that there's no two challenges repeated. So every episode has three different challenges. If you believe in ghosts, there are some moments that will give you some goosebumps. If you don't, like I said, their reactions to it makes it worth the watch anyways. There are times where all three are taking things very seriously, but more often than not, there is at least one person who doesn't believe at all and goes in all tough, and they're usually the ones that scream the loudest, whether it's from a ghost or a prank. You'll have to watch to see, but it's amazing. But I actually really liked this show. I don't think it has the best reviews online, but I love ghost shows, like I said, and I love comedy, so it was a perfect mix for me. Like I said, there were some moments where I got some goosebumps. The scene of the guy, I'm not going to tell you who, is left in the coffin legit had my anxiety through the roof. Like I said, I could never do that. Watching it was like hard enough. I mean, I wouldn't do like 90% of these things, but being left in a haunted forest, in a coffin, in a hole in the ground, absolutely. There were some moments that were kind of cheesy, and I didn't think all of the comedians were funny, but overall I really enjoyed the series, and I want there to be a second season, and maybe longer episodes with some more challenges, but it's not looking promising if I'm being honest. For things that stood out, there wasn't really anything. I mean, you hear the stories about the different places, but as far as like cultural differences or anything like that, I didn't notice anything. If you guys do notice anything, you can always let me know. For words and phrases, I was able to pick up four words, and three are because they are said during the intro for every episode, and those are piège, spelled P-I-E-G-E-S, and the first E has a grave accent. To me, it's the accent mark that looks backwards, because I'm used to the accent marks in Spanish that all go from left to right in an upward direction. This one goes left to right in downward action. But it means traps, piège, so that goes back to the fact that they play pranks on each other and how some of the challenges are them like legit strapped to a table. The next is défi, spelled D-E-F-I-S, and the E has an acute accent which goes from left to right in the upward direction. So for me, the standard accent mark that is often seen in Spanish, and it means challenges, so défi, challenges, and achantement, spelled U-N space C-H-A-T-I M-E-N-T, and the A in châtiment has a circumflex accent, which is the little upside down V above it, and it means a punishment, so the scaredest one faces enchantement, and that's how the narrator says it. So it's enchantement is how a normal person would say it, but it's not the fun way. It's funner when you just go enchantement, which is why it stuck with me. But the other word is wesh, spelled W-E-S-H, and Ahmed says this when the teddy bear starts making noises. It's translated as wow, but I would say it's the French equivalent of like yo, So it means a million things, including like what is happening, what's up, are you serious? It all depends on context. It's slang that comes from the suburbs outside of Paris and has origins in rap music. It also said online that if you said this to a group of French people, they would laugh at you, but if you used it in a text message or on social media, that it would be normal. But to be honest, as an American, no matter what I say, I expect a group of French people to laugh at me, whether my accent is perfect or not. So I guess just give them a reason to laugh at you and just walk up and be like, wish, because they're going to laugh at you anyways. So at least if you know why they're laughing at you, you won't feel as bad. But again, they are piège, défi, enchantement, and wish. If you guys are able to get any words or phrases where I pronounced any of those four words wrong, then please let me know. For familiar faces, I didn't recognize any of these comedians in this show, but I do have one of them. I'm not going to tell you which one. He's got a couple... That narrows it down for you. But he's got a couple specials on Netflix that I do plan on watching and covering soon, so stay tuned for that. But as far as recognizing them in this show, I didn't recognize any of them. If you guys do, let me know. But that's all I have for you guys for this show. If there is a second season, I will let you know. If you do give this show a chance, then let me know what you thought about it. Because again, I thought it was super, super funny. And you can laugh at people being scared, and who doesn't love laughing at people being scared? Okay, for the third and final show that I will be talking about in this episode, we have Secreto Bien Guardado from Argentina. It means well-kept secret. This show was suggested to me by my friend Amanda. She also suggested the show The Mire. I covered that last season, so about a year and a half ago. This show is a MYS production, INCAA, FB Group, and an Oriental Features production. It is based on the book Well Kept Secret by Viviana Rivero. It first aired on Cine.ar on April 15th, 2019. It is set in the 1940s. The first part of the show takes place at Aiden Hotel in Cordoba, Argentina in the summer of 1940. And then as the show goes on and time passes, a couple years go by. There is one season. It has 8 episodes. There are no shows that take place within 300 miles. They speak mostly Spanish in this show. There's a little bit of German and even less Italian. There are no audio alternatives and the subtitles are available in English, closed caption Spanish, Italian, and Brazilian Portuguese. It is rated TVMA, and the disclaimers that Netflix has for this show are nudity and smoking. My disclaimers are domestic abuse and rape, and I can't believe that Netflix did not include those. Sometimes the way that Netflix picks and chooses when they include sexual violence and when they don't include sexual violence literally blows me away. But there's domestic abuse and rape in the show. So the cast for the show is a little misleading, because if you look online, it seems like there are a lot of people. But like, literally only 3 people really matter, in my opinion. I will mention a couple more than 3, but to me, most of these people don't matter to the overall storyline of the show. So the 2 main characters that are important are Amelia Perez-Kiev, who's played by Oriana Sabatini, and Martin Muller, who is played by Victorio D'Alessandro. Amelia is a 17-year-old Argentinian. Her family is Jewish and they are on vacation at the Aiden Hotel. They are originally from Buenos Aires. She is the middle child and I'll get to her family in 5 seconds. Martin is a Nazi who is at Aiden Hotel trying to help get other Nazis returned to Nazi Germany. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. Amelia's family is made up of her father, Daniel, who is played by Jorge Suarez. Her mother, Carmela, is played by Naomi Franco. Her older sister Leah is played by Paula Sartor, and her younger sister Irine is played by Agustina Palma. Some other characters that we see are Anibal Stroh, who's played by Avian Winstein. He is a work associate of Daniel. Dario Franco, who's played by Matthias Meyer, is the cousin of the man that Leah is marrying, Manuel. Dario is the boy that Daniel wants Amelia to marry, but she doesn't want to marry him, maybe because she's 17 years old. I don't know. But those are the characters that I guess matter the most. There are some others, like there are more Nazis, but they don't really play that much into the story. Again, to me, there's like 3 people that actually impact the storyline. Other than that, I don't know why anybody else is there. But the description for the show is, in 1940 Argentina, a Jewish 17-year-old on vacation with her family falls in love with a young Nazi lawyer staying at the same hotel. That's really all there is to say about this show, and it's the reason it's in this episode. The opening minutes of the show explain basically why the Nazis are there in Argentina, trying to help other Nazis return to Germany. And it's basically because, like, a Nazi ship was caught off the coast or something. I don't know. The rest of the show is about Amelia and the Nazi falling in love, and the obvious and completely legitimate troubles that the two of them face. There aren't really any other storylines happening with the other characters that seem to be important at all. It's a pretty one-dimensional show. And to be honest, I didn't like this show. Like, I was so angry the whole time. The best part was the small bit of history at the beginning of the first episode, and the fact that the intro was between 3 to 5 minutes because it meant that there was less episode that I had to watch. The worst part of the show is the Nazis aren't that bad type of feeling that is present way too often. There are times where Amelia is basically like, I know what the Nazis are doing in Europe is bad, but like, they aren't doing that here. And I wanted to punch my laptop. And in my opinion, there were not nearly enough people grabbing this girl by the shoulders, looking her in the eyes and saying, he is a fucking Nazi. You are Jewish. His people are fucking murdering people like you. You cannot go to Germany with him to live happily ever after. You will be murdered, bitch. Like, I get she's 17, and most teenagers don't care about anything else but themselves. I get it. Usually, I'm completely against locking your kids up in their rooms when they don't listen to you, but, like, chain that bitch up to a radiator and don't ever let her see the light of day again until she snaps out of it, because he's a fucking Nazi. This isn't some Romeo and Juliet type story. And the romanticizing of Nazis just makes me feel gross. Like, Viviana Rivero, que chingados, wey. What is wrong? Like, what? Of all people, you're romanticizing Nazis? Are you serious? Like, it just, the whole time, I was like, ugh. Like, they're Nazis. I don't care if he's cute. Like, what the fuck, bro? I don't get it. I don't get it. I get enemies to lovers plots. I'm a fan. Okay, I'll read a book that has an enemy to lovers plot. Nazis and no. That's not enemies to lovers. Okay, no. Are there stories of, you know, probably Nazis and Jewish women or Jewish men and female Nazis falling in love? Sure, probably. But this book, the way that they romanticize it, no. The acting is also really bad. The actor that plays Martin is not good. Like, I am so sorry, Victorio, but oof. It was rough. It was really rough. It's super obvious that he doesn't actually speak German, which is fine. I know a lot of people that have to speak languages in shows or movies. They have to learn them. There's usually an accent. It's cool. But there are times where you can literally see him straight up reading off of a cue card. Like, the person he's looking at is not in his line of sight. It is clearly down, and like, you can tell he's reading off of a cue card. It's painful. The acting in this show is painful. It's just, oh my god. Okay. Let's just move on to the next thing. I also hated that at first they only posted the first 5 episodes, and when the 5th episode was ending, I was like, oh, thank god that was over, because what the fuck? And then I was shocked to see the next episode button pop up, and I was like, no! What? No! It said only 5 episodes! It said it was only 5 episodes! And then I went and checked, and it said that there were now 8 episodes, and I wanted to cry. So, I think overall, it's not my least favorite show, because that will forever be Hong Kong Stories, but it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad, I'm not gonna lie. I didn't enjoy the show. And I apologize, Amanda. I don't know if you watched this show, or if you saw it and you were like, this looks like something Maggie would like, because I watch a lot of Mexican shows, I watch a lot of shows just in Spanish in general from all different countries, but this was not good. So next, for other things that stood out, so there weren't actually a lot of things that stood out. I mean, it took place in the 1940s, so everything stood out. We do get to see some parts of a traditional Jewish wedding, which was interesting. I've never actually been to a Jewish wedding, so seeing parts of it in the show was nice. And it was a little bit more than just the breaking of the glass, which I think most people know that that happens in Jewish weddings, so it was nice to see a little bit more than that. They also sing Happy Birthday in episode 4, and it is different from the Chilean version that I've mentioned in episode 38, but the Argentinian version of Happy Birthday is, and I'm not a singer, so don't say anything, but it feels weird speaking it, so we're just gonna have to go with it. And it's gonna be bad, but here we go. Que los cumplas feliz, que los cumplas feliz, que los cumplas Miguel, que los cumplas feliz. Again, in school we were taught feliz cumpleaños a ti, feliz cumpleaños a ti, feliz cumpleaños a Miguel, feliz cumpleaños a ti. And they basically tell us that that is the only way to sing Happy Birthday, and it's universally sung in all Spanish-speaking countries. And so far, I don't think I've heard one Spanish, maybe in Spain, but I don't think they sing Happy Birthday in the Spanish shows that I've covered. I don't think I've heard one Spanish-speaking show sing Feliz Cumpleaños. Maybe teach people different ways to sing Happy Birthday. But I love learning the different ways to sing Happy Birthday. I will mention it every single time I get a chance, no matter what language it is. Most times it like clearly is happy birthday to you, just in a different language, which is what Feliz Cumpleaños a ti is. But anyways, I love learning happy birthday. And again, I will mention it every single time. But those are the only two things that really stood out while I was watching the show. If anything stands out to you watching the show, please let me know. I was able to pick up two words while watching the show, and they are varones, spelled V-A-R-O-N-E-S, and it means males, and nuera, which is spelled N-U-E-R-A, and it means daughter-in-law. So that's probably the best thing to come from the show. I can't believe I didn't know daughter-in-law before. Never got to that part of the family tree. But if you guys are able to pick up any words while watching the show, please let me know. I wasn't able to recognize any of the actors from the show, but if you are, also let me know. But that's all I have for you guys for the show. I don't know if there's going to be a second season. I hope not. If you want me to let you know if there is, then let me know, because I'm not going to be keeping an eye out for this one. I'm not going to lie. I want to forget this one forever. Again, not the worst show. That will always be Hong Kong West Side Stories. But this one is pretty close. It's pretty fucking close. If you can, I would love and appreciate if you would rate and review the podcast wherever it is that you listen to it. It helps a lot. As always, you can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at OfficialHYSI. You can check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/OfficialHYSI. And if you have any show suggestions or feedback, you can email me at haveyouseenit1@gmail.com. That is the number one, not the word. I hope you all have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend. Stay safe and healthy. And I will see you next week, where I will be talking about the historical fantasy Arthdal Chronicles from South Korea. Have you seen it? Because I have.